Would everyone please help me welcome our speaker tonight? It is Ashley H. from Neptune, New Jersey, and her home group is A Design for Living.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
I was telling him before the meeting how important I feel with my little clip-on piece. So if my ego explodes, just sorry to everyone in the front. But more importantly, my sobriety date is February 2nd of 2010. I have a home group, like he said, which is the Design for Living group in Neptune, New Jersey. And it's such an awesome, awesome group. If you're ever in the area, please make an attempt to get to that meeting. It will absolutely blow your mind. Oh, you can't hear me. Is that better? Am I talking loud enough? Okay. My home group, that's what I was talking about. And we meet Sunday nights at 7 o'clock, and it's a big book study group. And we go word for word through the big book. And it's amazing, the energy you feel in that group and just like the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we also just started a Wednesday night speaker meeting, which is also incredible. We brought it to an area where Alcoholics Anonymous is very, very needed. And I love my home group. And the thing I love about my home group is that I feel like I have a home there. I have a commitment there. I've had a commitment since I joined the group. It's very easy to get involved. And more importantly, there's a, like, you walk in and it's a really big group. It's like 200 people every Sunday night. And there's like powerful group of women over here, powerful group of women over here, powerful group of women over here. And like, I don't know where to sit because like, I want to be surrounded by all of them. But more importantly, like, they all know me on a very intimate level. And the minute I walk into my meeting, like, if there's something wrong, like, everybody already knows. And I'm connected with everyone in my group after I leave the meeting and when I get there the next week. And I think that's what's so important. And I absolutely, absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. And the person that's standing in front of you today was not the person that was here, you know, 4 years ago. Actually, I was telling Siobhan before the meeting, one of the first times I ever came out here, I remember I got in this huge, huge fight with my boyfriend at the time because I thought getting like a sober boyfriend before I got sober would be a really good idea, but I'll get into all that. We got in a huge fight because I still lied and manipulated and did all those things in early recovery. And my sponsor at the time was like, get in the car. And this is how she sponsored me. She was like, just get in the car. You know, and we were somewhere every night of the week, and it was absolutely incredible. And we came out here to see Dave Perry. And I was like, I can't wait to be like that and be like running back and forth all over the place and everyone laughing. And I move around a lot, but it really just kind of looks awkward. So I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the Alcoholics Anonymous I knew when I first got sober. My sponsor just got me in the car, and she shared her experience with me. And something so magical happened, and it had absolutely nothing to do with me, and it had absolutely everything to do with God and the women in Alcoholics Anonymous that showed me the way. I grew up in a really, really normal family. My dad is an alcoholic. He is sober upwards of 27, 28 years. He's not an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but he does have a personal relationship with God, and that is what keeps him sober, I believe. So I'm only 23 years old. I've never seen my dad pick up a drink. There was not alcohol in my house growing up. My mom would drink at family parties, and I just knew she got, like, annoying, and I didn't like it. And that was the extent of the knowledge I had about alcohol. I really don't remember a lot of stuff about my childhood. I have an older brother, who's older than me, and he could be standing here right now and tell you a completely different story. I just was, like, somewhere else in my childhood, and I really don't remember a lot of things at all. I can remember, like, places and things, but, like, memories, like, don't exist. And it's weird, like, as the years go on, like, a little bit more comes over time. I just think I never even realized that I didn't remember until I got sober. I was so just infatuated with myself and my thoughts and everything going on in my head. The first thing I really do remember is, you know, when I was 12, 13, going into the seventh grade, my parents hit some financial trouble and they decided they had to move. And they made the best decision they could for our family. And it was a better school system. It was a more affordable house. The athletics were better. The academics were better. And they just thought it would be the very best thing to do for everyone in the family. And I looked at them like, how could they do this to me? I'm going to be uprooted from everything I know, all my friends, all the people, my teachers, my school. I'm going to have no friends. And like, mind you, the houses between each other were 5 miles. Like, it's not like we moved to a different state or anything. But I did not ever, hi, Jeff. How are you? I haven't seen him in years. However, I just looked at it as they were doing it to me. They were doing it to ruin my life. They were doing it to make me unhappy. And I learned that using that those feelings I had and those emotions, I could manipulate them into getting me things, like a new bicycle or new clothes or this or that or the other thing. And I was petrified to go to this new school system. And I would tell my parents how petrified I am, but like this new outfit would make me feel better. And they like bought into it. They didn't know what to do with me. I was the most dramatic 13-year-old you would have ever met in your life. And I went to that new school system, and the first day they were like, the homeroom teacher's going to ask if anybody's new to the school district, and at that time, raise your hand and introduce yourself. So the homeroom starts, and that's all I can think of. Like, I can't really pay attention to, like, where I'm supposed to go, where lunch is, where this is, my lot, none of that. I'm hearing nothing. All that's going on in my head is, should I say, hi, my name's Ashley, or should I say, like, hi, I'm Ash? But if I say, hi, I'm Ash, they might think I'm saying, hi, I'm Ass. And that won't be, you know, and, like, maybe I should say, I'm Ashley, I'm new, or should I even say that I'm new? Because everyone's going to know that I'm new already, and they haven't seen me. You know, and I hear nothing that's going on. And I'm petrified. I have no idea what I'm going to say. It's not that hard of a thing. I know. And then, finally, the teacher says, is anybody new to the school district this year? And I'm so nervous that I'm shaking, that it looks like I'm waving at the teacher. And she calls on me, and I haven't decided how I'm going to introduce myself. So I'm like, I'm Ashley, I'm new. And these two girls turn around, who actually are two of my very good friends today. One's actually in recovery, too. It's incredible. They turn around, and they say hello to me. But I hadn't thought that far. You know, I hadn't thought about what to say to people if they talk to me. So I don't say anything, and I just stare at them blankly, like a deer in headlights. And that's basically how I walked around that school system that first year. And I wanted so badly to be well-liked. I wanted so badly to be popular. I just, if you liked me, I could like myself. I had no idea, you know, that's the time of your life where you're supposed to, like, find yourself. And I wanted nothing to do with that. I just wanted to be like you so you would like me. And that's what I did. And I would use that manipulation that I learned on my parents to buy me things that, you know, you might think I'm cool if I have this. And whatever music you listen to, all of a sudden I like it. And I've seen them in concert. And, you know, just anything to make you like me. Finally, these popular girls think that they like me, even though they don't even know who I really am. And they start, you know, as the year goes on, they start talking about partying and drinking and going out with guys. I'm like, oh, yeah, I drink with my cousins all the time. And, like, I have cousins, but I don't even really know them. None of them live around me. And the youngest one, there's, like, a 12-year difference. So there was, like, I just made this stuff up is what I'm trying to get at. And I really want to impress them. And for one wild, wild reason, there was a bottle of vodka in my house. There has not been a bottle of vodka in my house since then. This is the only bottle that ever existed at my parents' house. And, you know, I wanted these girls to like me, so I stole a water bottle of it, poured the water back in, and, you know, hid it in my closet for a week. I invited these girls over, and we sat around in a circle, and we just, you know, took some swigs of vodka and chased it with orange juice, and nothing happened. You know, I sat in the corner of my room, and I rocked back and forth, but all of a sudden, like, I felt like I knew who I was. I felt like I found what completed me. I didn't not have to impress you anymore, because if I could just feel like this, I could like myself, and I could care less what you think about me. And I fell madly, madly in love with alcohol, and nothing before or after that ever, ever came close to the infatuation I found that day. And I could still feel it. You know what I mean? Whenever I like tell my story, I could like still feel how I felt that day. However, it's not easy for a 13-year-old girl living in suburbia to get her hands on alcohol when mommy and daddy don't have a liquor cabinet. So I went to like great lengths at that age to get alcohol. Like, I would break into garages, I would break into your parents' liquor cabinet, I would talk you into drinking no matter what it took. And very early on, I started to get in a lot of trouble. The first time I got into a lot of trouble, and this is basically like where it goes downhill, these guys met us at the park, and they had a brown bottle that had a handle on it. Still to this day, I don't know what it was, but these guys were taking it by the handle and throwing it back. And it was raining, and we were under a tree. And the girls I was with were like, why don't we ask them to like pour some in a water bottle and then go back to your house and like drink in your basement like we did the other time? And I was like, no way. Like, I need to get my hands on this now. Like, I need to have that feeling. So I start throwing it back, and before you know it, I go into a blackout. I walk into the wrong house. The police get called. I walk into my house, and just, they have like, my parents have a table with like knickknacks and picture frames and everything. And I come in, I smash it all down. I'm calling my parents disgusting names, and like, I am my father's gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad loves me more than anything in the world. Me and my brother, there's a 9-year difference in age, and they lost 4 babies in between him and me. And the doctor said, like, I'm sorry, but, like, you're only going to have 1 child. And, you know, I was their miracle. You know, I was the daughter that they wanted and loved so much. And in a matter of weeks, I become an animal. And I suffer from all sorts of consequences. I get expelled from school. I can't go on the class trip. I'm kicked off the basketball team. All of that. And I could care less. You know, the only thing that crosses my mind is how am I going to get ungrounded so I can do this again? Like, I was willing to do whatever it took to get that feeling again. And, you know, I would clean the house from head to toe. I'd get an A on a spelling test. I'd put it on the fridge. My parents would come home from work. I'd be like, welcome, Mom and Dad. You know, I made dinner because I'm your perfect daughter that shouldn't be grounded. And they bought it. And, like, I was right back to where I was. And those popular girls really didn't want to hang out with me anymore. I if Ashley was around, someone somehow was going to get in trouble. And what I did, what I had to do, was go from group of friends to group of friends to find people that were doing what I wanted to do, that had what I wanted, and I was willing to do whatever it took to get that feeling. And I, you know, what I thought was okay and acceptable, that bar kept getting lower and lower and lower and lower until I was doing things like I couldn't even find people around me to be like, they're much worse off than me. You know, but I would have, you know, manipulated myself into believing that somehow. And I got in all sorts of trouble. I mean, it's incredible how much trouble I got in. I went to Scared Straight at the Monmouth County Jail. I went to Scared Straight for 24 hours in Clinton State Prison. And, like, this is before I even started doing other stuff. Like, that was just straight drinking. And then it just got worse and worse and worse. And people would be like, try this and try that. And I would, you know, anything to get outside of myself. And I didn't even know why. You know, I couldn't understand, like, how other people were enjoying their lives not doing the things that I was doing. Like, I felt bad for them. Like, they were missing out somehow. And I was good at athletics. I had an awesome job lifeguarding in the summer. I'm a very talented swimmer. But I got kicked off the swim team 3 times in 4 years. And, you know, I had this job, and lifeguarding is like an alcoholic dream job, because, like, it's very acceptable to, like, start drinking at 4 o'clock. But, like, my problem was, like, I would start drinking at 4 o'clock, and I wouldn't stop until the morning. And then I would come to on a lifeguard stand. like supposed to be protecting your children in the ocean. And I'd look at whoever I was sitting next to and be like, what time is it? And how did I get here? And they're like, you need to go home and take a shower because you reek of booze. And that's just how I live my life. And I don't know what my parents were thinking, but they worked really hard like they always did. And they got me a car and they sat down and they're like, whatever you do, do not drink and drive. Like, call us, call a cab, throw your keys in the ocean, stay in your car, stay wherever you are. Like, we know you, we can't make you stop drinking, but like, please don't drink and drive. And I was like, didn't hear any of that. I was like, this is the best way to get from party, to like drive wherever I need to go, to get whatever I need to get. And 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, I was arrested for a DUI. And my first thought wasn't like, wow, this was a really bad idea. My first thought was like, good, I don't ever have to be suggested as the designated driver, you know? And the court like went on and on and on, and I wound up only losing my license for 4 months, but like I didn't get it back for a year and a half because it cost $40 to go get a new license, and I was like, I could find so much other stuff to buy with $40. Like, I'm not wasting it on a little piece of plastic that's gonna allow me to drive. So I went to one AA meeting after the DUI. It was at the Shoreline Club, which is like the most incredible place, but like if you're new, it's terrifying. It's like this grungy old basement with like a lot of old dudes, and they were talking about the fourth step out of the 12 and 12, and like that is not a beginner's meeting at all. And I'm like, oh, this place is terrifying, I'm never coming back. And I got drunk that night, and that's basically how it went. And it just got from so bad to so much worse, and I started waking up places and not knowing where I was. I started, you know, walking all over my friends. My friends were constantly coming to wherever I was, searching for me all night, sitting me down and saying, Ashley, you drink too much. Something happens to you when you drink that doesn't happen to anyone else. And I'd be like, guys, I drank tequila last night. You know, that will happen to anyone that drinks tequila. If I drink beer, I'm fine, you know, and I just constantly going back and forth. Towards the end of my senior year of high school, I barely draw a sober breath. Throughout school, I have some sort of substance in my body to get me through. I'm drinking every night of the week, and I think it's totally okay. I'm waking up shaking, and I have to have a drink just to calm me down so I can get to school, get what I need, get through the day. And I thought that was fine. And everyone's dreaming about going off to college and all these things. And I'm resentful now. You know, I'm resentful at my parents because, you know, they don't have the money to send me to college. Mind you, all of the money that they saved and worked so hard for me to go to college is now paying lawyers and court fees and bailing me out of jail. You know? And I just don't see that. And you know, I use it against them. I say, if you gave me this life, I wouldn't be the way I am. And I just destroyed them. And I would not come home for weeks at a time. And I'd show up to school wasted. And this one particular time, the school police officer had known me well. He took me by my hand and he was like, you know, Ashley, I can't watch you do this to yourself anymore. And he arrested me right in front of the school. And everyone saw it as they were coming and going, and they brought me to the police station. They had me double cuffed to the bench. And I could hear my dad's voice, but I couldn't see him. And at this point, my dad had bailed me out of everything. You know, I'm his little girl. He loves me no matter what. And I can hear him say, like, I don't want her. Like, you guys just do whatever you have to. I really could care less. And there's not much you can do with, like, a drunk 18-year-old. So the school police officer brought me back to my house, and my mom was crying so loud I could hear it from the outside of my house. And they walked in, my dad was looking at me like a terrorist just walked into his house. And he said, what are you going to do now? And I was like, I guess I'll go to AA. And at this time I had my best friend, who was one of those girls, remember, that turned around in the beginning. She had gone to rehab. We both spiraled out of control in two different directions. She went to rehab probably a month before this happened, and she came back, and our lockers were next to each other all throughout high school, and we were best friends. And when she came back, the day she came back to school, I walked the other way, you know, because I didn't want to see her. I had nothing to offer her. I was empty, and, like, she was trying to better herself, and I just ignored her for 2 weeks. You know, I didn't say one word like, how are you? Where you been? How was rehab? You know, none of that. I just looked the other way. And that's how I am. You know, I just look the other way and walk away because I don't want my emotions to get involved. But I call her and I asked her to take me to a meeting, and she was more than willing. And we went up to this meeting, and it was this big long hall church, and it was like 100 old people, and it was a celebration. And I raised my hand that I was new. Some people turned around and said hello, and I didn't understand anything anyone was saying, besides the last lady that celebrated, who had to be like pushing 100. She was celebrating like 60 years of sobriety. And she got up there and she talked about exactly how I felt. She felt like she wanted to die more than she wanted to be sober, and she couldn't understand how you would live sober. And like some sort of light went on in my head, like maybe, just maybe this will work for me. And me and this girl and another girl from our high school, we like ran around AA, and we didn't take anybody's suggestions, and we went to other fellowships. And our purpose of going to AA meetings wasn't to get sober. It was like to find a boyfriend and, you know, like find out like something fun to do and all that stuff. You know, I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't do the steps. I didn't listen. I read them once, and that was enough for me. And I went to a lot of discussion meetings at that Shoreline Club, and I would raise my hand and I would tell everybody what I thought, which, like, you know, happens a lot there, and it's like nothing good, you know, like it's a lot of just emotions and like no one really like trying to help anyone, and it's incredible. I love going there today, and talking about God, but like that just wasn't going on. Like I'm sure there was people there that were talking about it, but like my blinders were on and I wasn't listening. And I was looking for anything to make myself feel better, and I would buy clothes and I would get boyfriends and I would, you know, do all of that stuff. And even though my life was better and I finally had an extra $40 to go get my license and I could drive, like I was still empty inside and I was broken and I wanted nothing to do with my life. And finally enough time went by and I just couldn't take it anymore, and I started to drink again. And I told my friends that, like, now that a little bit of time's gone by, like, I won't be as bad as I was. And that is so false. I was worse, you know, and right back to where I was, waking up in places I didn't know where I was, next to people I really didn't know that well, and not knowing why. You know, my parents would constantly ask me, like, why did you do this again? And as much as I wanted to give them an answer or an excuse or something, like, I didn't know. You know, I don't know why I can't go out and drink like my friends. You know, I don't know why I can't just play around a beer pong and call it a night and go home. Like, I don't know why I get to that point. I don't know why when I start drinking, I just cannot stop. And that goes on for a while. And then February 1st wasn't like any other night, you know. Bottle of vodka, some other stuff, and I just drank myself into a hole in a couch, and I came to, and I didn't know where everyone went, you know, and I didn't understand how it was 9 o'clock the next day, and what happened in the night, and who was here, and what was I doing, and all that stuff. I had no idea. And one of those annoying AA people that I met in that little brief stint of sobriety, they kept calling me. And like I said, I thought getting a sober boyfriend would help and going to church. And like, I tried all this stuff to fix me. You know what I mean? One of those annoying AA people called me and they told me that there's a meeting at Brookdale, which is the community college I was going to, an hour and a half before my class, and I should go. And I was like, I was drinking all night long. Like, there's no way I'm going to an AA meeting an hour and a half before my class even starts. You know, I'm lucky if I even get to my class today. But the grace of God intervened in my life on that day. And I went home and I took a shower and I drove to that meeting. And it was three older gentlemen, which I weren't sure why they were at a community college. One compared himself to Bill Wilson, the other complained about his wife, and the third one complained about his professor. And, you know, I'm just so stuck in me, and I'm so scared, and I'm so broken, and I don't know why I'm like this. And I let these poor three gentlemen have it, you know? And it, the emotions and my thoughts just come pouring out on these poor guys. They're probably still recovering from that day, I'm telling you. It was rough. You know, but something happened to me that day, and I walked out of that room and I felt lighter. You know, I felt like a different human being. And I walked into my class, and, you know, like any, like, tough alcoholic drug addict that I am, like, I call my mom crying. And she, like, has no idea what to even say or, you know. But, like, proud Al-Anon mom, she just says, "Ashley, there's nothing I can do to help you, but there's a place you can go for help," you know. And I was like, "Whatever, mom," and I hung up on her. But, like, I went to that place where I could get help, and I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I called a woman who I knew had a working knowledge of these 12 steps, and I called her, and I was broken, and I asked her to sponsor me. And she asked me to read the doctor's, or she told me to read the doctor's opinion 3 times and call her again the next day. So I read it twice, and I called her. She's like, "Did you read it 3 times? I'm like, "Well, I read it twice." She's like, "Read it again and call me back." And she hung up on me. I was like, "Oh my God, she's so mean." But I read it again and I called her. And, you know, I still have that mindset and those old ideas that I just want you to like me. You know, because if you like me, even in AA, I'm like this. Like, I think if you like me, then I must be sober, you know? And, like, that's all I can think of. So she's like, "Did you understand everything about the allergy?" And I'm like, "Yeah," you know, thinking that's what she wants to hear. And she's like, "All right, great, I'll pick you up tomorrow." She picked me up tomorrow, and we were going down to South College, actually. She was speaking, you all should definitely go, because it's awesome. She put me in her car, and it's 2 hours away from Belmar, New Jersey, and we had an hour and a half to get there. And it was awesome. And she's, like, whipping through the lanes. And, you know, she's just the most incredible woman I know, honestly. And the whole time, like, she's just talking about God and chain-smoking cigarettes. And I'm not hearing anything. I'm just, like, scared to death. You know, and that's how I got sober. I got sober by, you know, this woman just telling me her experience. Her showing me how to live this life. Her showing me how there's a better way, how you can be happy, how you can have relationships, how you can do these things. Like, we didn't sit down and study anything. She didn't give me assignments. She didn't, you know, she didn't tell me how to think. She showed me. And I think that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. You know, I can stand here and tell you how I got sober day after day, but, like, if you want what I have, like, I have to show you. You know what I mean? And it happens after I leave this meeting. It doesn't happen while I'm up here. Like, this is a pleasure, and I love it, and I love meeting people. But, like, what's going to really matter is, like, tomorrow morning when I don't want to get up for work and I want to, like, curse at my boyfriend for making too much noise. You know, like, that's what sober is all about, like, how I live my life differently. And I wrote this 4-step, and I got really, really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. There was this awesome group of younger people, some of which I went to high school with, and we just had fun. You know what I mean? We would be like 30 deep at Pete and Alda's, which is like a pizza place by us. Some of you have been there now. We'd be like 30 deep there, like causing like a riot on their like party room. You know, and they knew we were coming every week. And we went to rehabs, and we went to detoxes, and we went to conventions, and we went, you know, everywhere. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous the same way that 14-year-old girl sitting in her bedroom fell in love with a Poland Spring bottle filled with vodka. And I had no idea what I was doing. And that was the best part. I just believed that whatever you guys were doing was working, and you were happy, and you were having fun, and that's what I wanted. And if, you know, and that might not work for every single person here. I know if I were still doing that today, it would not be working anymore. But if I were 19 years old and I wasn't having the time of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you would have a different speaker tonight. And I'm so thankful for everyone that was a part of it. Like I said, I did my step work. I sat with her. I did as thorough as a 4-step as I could at the time. I was so busy traveling and doing all this stuff. Like, I didn't even know, like, right from wrong. I went out and I made these amends as best as I could. A lot of them I had to go do again after you get sober, which is horrible. I don't suggest it for anyone. Amends are way harder once you're sober a little while than they are when you're new. And I'm speaking at meetings, and my first sponsee, I was down at a meeting, and there's this beautiful little girl. And, you know, when you're speaking, you feel like you're talking, like, right at someone, and it just happens. She comes up to me after the meeting. She's like, I've never really heard, like, young people like you. Can, like, you take me to a meeting or whatever? I pick her up the next day, and I'm talking to her the way my sponsor talked to me, you know, doing it the exact same way, showing her how I got sober, showing her how to have fun in AA. And I find out she's 14 years old. But what's better than that she's 14 years old is she's exactly like me. And she drinks the same way that I drink, and she feels the same way that I feel. And that little girl is still sober today. And Thursday, she's graduating from high school. And she's been sober the whole time, and she's absolutely incredible. And again, like, that's nothing to do with Ashley. It's everything to do with God. Because after a while, I was like, listen, Liz, I really don't know what I'm doing sponsoring. I'm getting a new sponsor, and, like, I advise you to do the same, you know. And, like, that comes a little later on. But we're still best friends to this day. And it's just incredible what you see in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see people's lives get transformed. With her, I got to see an entire family get transformed. I knew her brother in high school. He got sober. Her parents got sober. And it's just amazing. From there, things don't work out with that AA boyfriend. Shocking to everyone here, I know. But it was bad, and it was ugly, and I was, like, in the fetal position for, like, weeks. Like, I hid in a closet for a few hours, like, crying hysterically, thinking it was the worst thing that could possibly happen. But thank God for good sponsorship. And my sponsor was like, if you want to feel better, you better get your ass in Alcoholics Anonymous and get active. And I took that to, like, the biggest extreme. And instead of, like, dealing with any emotions, like, in the matter of, like, 6 months, I was from Miami, Florida to Portland, Maine, and everywhere in between. Like, I just couldn't sit still. I couldn't stand to be with myself, and I felt like if I were around you guys, I was okay. And that lasted as long as it lasted, and, like, I didn't stay in the fetal position forever. I did a lot of damage, naturally, but you know what? Like, it made me grow up. I love Alcoholics Anonymous because I grew up here. You know, I became the person that I am because of all of you and learning from my mistakes and, like, you guys just being there for me the whole way. From there, a little bit of time goes past. I'm just going to give you the short version. I wind up getting pregnant. And I have no intentions of being in a relationship with this person. That's just kind of the way I was conducting myself at the time, which wasn't good, and I don't know what to do, and I'm scared to death, and I'm calling all my friends and my sponsor and my new sponsor. I had a new sponsor at the time, and I am just so petrified of what just happened to me. And I had just gotten a new sponsor maybe 2 weeks before then, so I don't really know her that well, you know, and I'd call her up like, hey, Mary Beth, do you have a second to talk? I'm pregnant. She's like, wait, back up, like, 2 weeks. Like, what happened in between then? So I call her, and I'm devastated, like I said, and she said, Ashley, do you want children? I was like, yeah, but I'm 20 years old. Like, I want children in, like, 10 years, you know? And she's like, well, God has just answered your prayer, and he's answered a prayer he doesn't answer for all of his children. And who are you to play God? You know, and I was just blown away. Like, I never thought of myself playing God. You know what I mean? Like, I read the third step. I took a third step. I showed other girls the third step. But, like, it just came, like, it became real. You know what I mean? And I wound up moving to Pennsylvania and, like, deciding to have this child with this person I don't even really like that much. But again, like, I'm still that person that if you like me, I'll be okay. And, like, when I'm in fear or I'm uncomfortable, like, I resort back to that. Like, I'll resort back to that tomorrow if I'm not connected to God, you know? I'll be that person again. So I get there. I'm at that point. I just want you to like me. I want everyone to think everything's okay. And it gets really scary really fast. And I move out to Pennsylvania, south of here, and I think it's going to be fine. I think everybody's going to love me. I'm such a great AA member. Like, they're going to welcome me with open arms, and I'm going to be the speaker at least once a week. You know, like, all these ideas I have. And I go there, and I'm scared to death, and I don't know how to talk to people, you know, and there's so many people, and I don't know anyone. And, like, instead of making myself uncomfortable and, like, you know, trying to help someone and maybe, like, feeling better that way, like, I just, like, back off from everyone. And I go so far and so deep inside. Like, I suffered from a really, really serious depression in this time. And I knew what I needed to do to get out, but I didn't do it fully. What I would do is I would tell you some of it, and I would tell you a little bit of it, and I would tell, you know, the whole story, like, only a few people knew a few parts, you know, and I got in such a dark, deep place, and everybody else was the problem, you know what I mean? And I was so dishonest with myself that I couldn't see reality anymore, and it was the most petrifying thing that ever happened in my life. On top of that, I'm about to have a baby, you know, and I just don't know how to talk to people, and I'm going to have this baby, and I don't even want it, you know what I mean? And I'm so scared that they're going to hand it to me, and I'm not going to know what to do, and all of this stuff, and I know that there's really bad stuff going on with the person I was with, but I don't know how to tell anyone. You know, I will try as hard as I can to get honest and tell someone and ask for help, but I just absolutely can't. So I wind up having this baby, and I have emergency C-section. Oh my gosh, the time's going so fast. I have emergency C-section, and I'm scared, and all of this stuff is going on. And I'm really foggy the whole time I'm in a hospital, like, because it's a pretty serious procedure and all that. And I was fine. The baby was fine. He's beautiful, 10-pound, gorgeous boy. And, like, it didn't hit me until I got home. And I was holding him one day in the rocking chair, and I'm just looking at him. And I had no idea I could love something or someone as much as I love this little baby. And I'm blown away. And at that exact time, everything that's going on inside my head, like, I realize that's how much God loves me. You know, He loves me just like that little baby, and, like, He loves all of us just like that. And even though this terrible stuff is going on around me, like, I know I'm going to be okay because I have that connection with God. Because of all of you, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have that to hold on to. And stuff goes from really bad to really worse, but I wind up back in New Jersey with my family, and the person I was with was using, and I'm going to save him, and it's going to be fine, and he's going to detox overnight, and we're going to live happily ever after, and, like, three rehabs and two detoxes later, like, he robbed my entire family, and, you know, and he was gone, you know, and it doesn't matter, like, none of that really matters, like, he was gone, I have this baby, he's probably 4 or 5 months old at this time, and, like, I have, like, a really serious decision to do, like, do I sit here and feel sorry for myself, or do I take this as an opportunity to get so close to my God as I understand Him, that it will be absolutely untouchable for the rest of my life. And that was a really, really hard decision to make, guys, because I wanted to sit there, and I wanted to feel sorry for myself, and I wanted to cry, and I wanted to tell you how bad my life was. You know, I really, really did. You know, but thank God for the women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for the women in my home group, because I would walk in there, and I always wore, like, yoga pants, a hoodie, and a hat, like, no matter what time of year it was, because, like, I didn't want you to get close to me. And I would sit in the back with the baby, and, like, one of the women in my home group would come up, and they'd say, this is your meeting tonight, and they would pick him up, and they would take him for the hour. You know what I mean? And I didn't have to worry, and I got to be there, and I got to hear the message, and I got to connect with my sponsor, and I made some serious sacrifices. You know, I went back to work, and I'd have to find babysitters, and, you know, it was so difficult, but, like, I got this freedom in that time, like, I got this freedom in embracing the hardship, and, like, walking through it, and knowing that someday, somehow, this is going to benefit someone, and I don't know how, and I don't know why, but I believed it then, and I believe it now, And I got through it, you know, thanks to all of you. And I did the most intense four-step of my entire life. I worked hard on the big book. And not that I worked hard on it, but I made the big book personal to myself. You know what I mean? Every line of the big book I sat down and I read with my sponsor. Not because I want to be a big book thumper and sit up here and quote it to you. Because, like, I need this program to be my program. You know, I need to live it in every aspect of my life. And as that happened, my life got so good. And I had absolutely nothing to do with it. Like I said, I wanted to sit there and tell you how bad my life was. And I had a crappy job that turned into a little bit of a better job, you know, and that little bit of a better job made me enough money so I could, like, enroll in school. And, you know, and I got free of all those things. And in this process, like, I found out who I was and who I am to be. You know what I mean? Like, I might not be all together and things might not be great. This bill might not get paid and, you know, this amends might not work out. But, like, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know the person that I'm, how I'm to show up in every relationship in my life. And I got a lot of that stuff that was blocking me and I didn't even know it was there blocking me. You know, just the more it opened up, the more it opened up, the more it opened up, and, like, the freer I got. You know, my sponsor constantly asked me, she's like, how free do you want to be? You know, how many amends do you have that are unfinished? Like, who is that hurting, holding on to this stuff? And I'm not perfect at all. Like, I hold on to a lot of it. It took, like, I just was telling Sarah, like, I had this amends that, like, if I, like, explained the whole situation, you'd be like, why do you owe that amends? But, like, I know for myself that I do. And just making that attempt gave me so much freedom. You know, and stuff that was happening in the current relationship that I am in, like, dropped. You know, and these things you don't even think are related, like, they are. And that's what happens when we take action in this program. Like, it's endless. So let me backtrack a little bit because I'm kind of going all over the place. I saved enough money. I enrolled in school, and I was scared to death. You know, I have to put my son in daycare. He was a year and a half at the time. I didn't know how I was going to make it. I didn't know how I was going to buy food or, you know, I'm going to work one day a week, go to school five, and somehow balance, like, AA and the rest of my life. And, like, take this accelerated 12-week course, you know, like, not, like, enroll and take one class, see how it goes. I was like, no, all in, accelerated course, 12 weeks, take an exam, you know, that's just how I am. But I did it, and I did it with the help of you know what I mean? And when I needed a babysitter so I could go study, like, I was able to pick up the phone and call someone and go study. And I was able to do these things because of the foundation I had in Alcoholics Anonymous, because of this program I have that helps me in all areas of my life. And I did exceptionally well in this program. I was one of the top scorers on the exam in the state of New Jersey. I took an internship, which was great. And I started applying for jobs and all this stuff. And, you know, like any of us, I'm, like, scared to death. I'm like, now I just spent thousands of dollars on school, and I'm only working one day a week, and, you know, I'm never going to find a job. I know it, you know. And I set myself up for failure in my head. And my sponsor's, like, you know, she's like, you need to pray and meditate on that and, like, let that stuff go. Like, what are you holding on to? So I started applying for jobs, and the last day of my internship, I get a call for an interview, and I go on the interview, and it was great, like, so great. And if I could have written on paper everything I wanted on a job, out of a job, you know, or a career and, like, everything I was getting into, I would have settled for half of that list. This job I placed, I got that whole list. And again, it had absolutely nothing to do with me at all. And I absolutely love what I do. I work in the medical fields, and I work closely with internal medicine doctors, and I see this disease every single day of my life. You know, the prescription drugs are, and drugs in general, are an absolute epidemic where I live. In the past I think it's the past like 6 months, there's been 75 deaths in Monmouth and Ocean County, which is where I'm from, and it's all people under the age of 26. And I see this every single day. And I don't go in there and say, like, oh, I'm a recovered alcoholic, like, let me help you and take you to a meeting. Like, what I get to do is be an example of a human being that's living a different way of life. You know, and I don't look at these people like, oh, refill seeker again. You know, like, I get to look at them with compassion, you know, and explain to them the dangers and the things that they're doing and, like, you know, as best as I can guide them to, like, where they can get help. And more importantly, like, I can bring that into my own life, and I can bring that to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can bring it to my home group. I can sit down with these girls who are 19, 20 years old, and they are just riddled with this disease, and they don't feel like they belong in Alcoholics Anonymous because of the things that they've done. And, like, guys, these drugs are, like, yes, I don't want to get into the controversy of drugs and all this stuff, but, like, all it's doing is accelerating alcoholism, you know, and bringing girls like me into this room so much sooner. And I get to sit down with them, and I get to show them Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to show them the way I was and the way I am today, and, like, they don't have to live the life that they're living, and it's magical to see someone's eyes turn on. Absolutely magical. And I have this life that I never, ever, ever would have imagined. Like I said, I, like, kids, like, maybe when I was 30, like, maybe, I don't know. But I have this 2-year-old boy, his name's Creedon, and he's perfect. You know, every single day, I get to walk into his room and take him out of his crib, and he is just beaming to see me, you know? And I'm that girl, you know, that you don't want to invite to your party because you don't know what's going to happen and who's going to get called. And now another human being relies on me for all of their needs in life. And it is the biggest joy and the biggest pleasure I've ever seen. And I kind of skipped over, but I want to get back to, like, the relationship I have with my parents. Very volatile. Like I said, I had to go back and make amends to them about a year ago because it's just hard. You know, like, we all have our family issues, and I have my own as well. And my mom always wanted a daughter. You know what I mean? And I was, like, a tomboy alcoholic that's exactly like my dad. So she was like, great, where's that, like, little princess I always imagined? And I got to make amends to her this past year and really get down to, like, what I did wrong. Not just, like, Mom, I owe you amends for, like, what I did wrong, yada, yada, yada. Is there anything I left out? Like, this time I really got to, like, get down to, like, an emotional level with my mom. And all she said was, like, actually, I just want us to be there for each other. Like, I love you and you love me and, you know, we're a great big, no. And I get to do that. Like, I didn't do that before. Like, my mom was always just my mom, you know. But, like, now my mom is my friend, you know. And it's amazing because this woman, like, didn't even want to pick up my phone calls when I called her. And now we talk on the phone 3 days a week, you know. And we don't talk, like, yeah, I asked her to babysit and I asked her favors and all this stuff, but, like, I can call her about my job and just, like, explain something to her. And, like, you know, my mom's a nurse, and I never, ever wanted to be a nurse because my mom's a nurse, and I don't want to be anything like my mom. But, like, right now I'm working as an MA in a doctor's office, and in September I'm starting nursing school. You know how, like, things come full circle, and I get to talk to my mom about this stuff. And when I was in school, like, she would come over and help me study. Like, I got to be that daughter she always imagined she would have. And I thought it was too late. You know, I thought, like, oh, I'm older now, I have my own family and all this stuff. Like, no. Like, I get to do that. And my dad, like I said, is not an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He struggles with untreated alcoholism. I don't know if I can even say that. He appears to me as if he struggles with untreated alcoholism. It's probably the best way to say. My sponsor says I'm not supposed to have an opinion on it. But he has a lot of financial insecurity and a lot of a lot of that stuff that he can't get through, and I owe him thousands and thousands of dollars, and I got to sit down with him because I kind of just forgot that on my first inventory. But I got to sit down with him and like really talk to him about the money I owe, and like he really knows the exact amount. And I said, like, you know, this money's yours, and if you don't take it, it's going somewhere. That's how I was directed to do it. And he said, that money is going to go into an account. And I put $50 into this account, and he puts $50 into this account. And the account has my son's name on it. So my son, when he's 18 years old and he's ready to go to college, that money's there for him so he can have a better life. You know, because that's what my dad always said. He's like, Ashley, I didn't want you to struggle with this disease because I wanted you to have a better life than I did. And I said, Dad, I do. You know, I have a good life. And, like, now collectively we're putting money into this account as an amends to my father, as a gift for my son. You know, and my dad's, like, really, like, rough guy. Like, if you saw him, like, in the aisle in the supermarket, you might go to the other aisle and come around. And, like, I love him for it. Like, he's like a teddy bear to me. And I get to see my son whenever my dad walks into the house, like, light up with so much joy and excitement that his pop-pop's in the house, that, like, he will stop doing whatever he's doing and run and throw his arms in the air. And they are, like, absolutely in love with each other. And again, this has absolutely nothing to do with me and everything to do with God. And some stuff happened with my extended family, and my dad is in this, like, really dark place. And I have this brother, like I said, and we see things two completely different ways. And my brother kind of, like, is very emotional, and, like, it's all about him and how poor Mark, yada, yada, yada. And, like, I get to be, like, the mediator between the two of them. Like, you know, our dad is a sick person, and he can't deal with his emotions, and it has nothing to do with us. You know, all we can do in this situation is be a family to each other. You know, me and my brother, who haven't had a relationship over the past few years, like, we talk to each other every single day because I know he needs it. And if that means taking 30 minutes out of my day at night when I'd rather be, like, watching TV or doing something, like, just texting him, asking how his day was, like, sending him a funny video and, like, telling him how much I love him, you know, because that's all he's looking for and that's all he needs. And this is not the person that came out here with her sponsor, you know, 4 years ago. I got to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have an entirely new life that I would have never, ever thought was possible. And it's all thanks to you guys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you so much for having me. I hope I brought you a good meeting.